Good morning, everybody. In the times of Chazal, the Jewish calendar was not fixed as we have it today, and each and every month it would have to go through a process of declaring Rosh Chodesh via the witnesses who saw the new moon. A similar process was necessary in order to proclaim a given year as a leap year. There was a requirement for the great leaders of the time to convene in a very specific place and declare the year as such. There's a very interesting story told in the Gemara Sanhedrin, Daf Chaf Vav Amud Aleph, about the process of Iber Hashanah. And it's a story that I want to spend a few minutes paying attention to, because I think there's a great lesson that we can glean from the story. There are two Amoraim named Rab Chiya and Rab Shimon, two very good friends who were traveling together to a particular city to determine if that year should be a leap year or not. As they were traveling, the great Amora Reish Lakish happened to chance upon them, and decided to join this illustrious group of Tamine Chachamim and be a part of the leap year committee, so to speak. It just so happened that that particular year was also a Shemitah year, which means it was a year in which we are not allowed to do any work on the fields or on the land. So along the journey, they chance upon someone who was plowing his field, although, as we said, it was a Shemitah year in which plowing was certainly not permissible. And Reish Lakish immediately begins to decry this terrible behavior. How dare this individual plow his field during a Shemitah year? Doesn't he know that such activities are not permissible during this year? How can we, the three great Torah leaders, sit by idly and watch this farmer openly violate the laws of Shemitah? But Rab Chiya and Rab Shimon find a very special place in their hearts to defend and explain the farmer's behavior. And they said that perhaps this Jewish farmer is an apprentice for a non-Jew. Perhaps he's doing work for a field which is not governed by the laws of Shemitah. And the three of them continue on their way. A few minutes later, they notice yet another Jewish farmer doing work on his tree. And Reish Lakish again begins to protest. How can we sit by and watch the Jewish farmer work on his field during Shemitah? Don't we know you're not allowed to do so? The Torah tells us we can't do any work on the fields. And again, Reb Chiya and Reb Shimon calm the situation, and they offer some sort of strange defense for the farmer's behavior on working on his tree. After a little bit more time, the Gemara tells us that they finally reached their destination, in which they had planned to declare the year a leap year. But when they arrived, the two great Amoraim, Rab Chiya and Rab Shimon, commented about their good friend Reish Lakish, "Trudo Hudain, this friend of ours is such a pain in the neck. He's irritating us. He's so annoying. Every time he passed something along the way, he would shout and scream about it. He's just a very annoying personality to have around." And so, they decided to lock Reish Lakish out of the room, and they denied him access into the leap year proceedings. Immediately, Reish Lakish turns around and runs to the great leader, Rabbi Yochanan, to complain about the incident. But listen what he says to Rabbi Yochanan. V'chi b'nei adam ha-chashudim al ha-shviyas. Can we have two individuals who aren't even careful or concerned about the laws of Shemitah? Are these two people, who I went along the journey with them, and they did not see anything wrong with two Jewish farmers plowing the fields, can they be the ones to declare the year as a leap year? They're not worthy of representing all of us. They're not careful when it comes to mitzvah observance at all. So Reish Lakish complained about his two friends that he felt they were not worthy of being the ones to be ma'abra the shana. This is the story that the Gemara records. The Tzlach asks a very obvious question. The Tzlach is obviously the same author as the Noda B'Yehuda, and he points out that if Reish Lakish was insulted that he had been locked out of the room by his two friends, why did he choose to register a complaint about their level of tolerance for the questionable farmers? He should have registered a complaint about the way they treated him. And if in fact he was not complaining because he felt slighted on a personal level, then why did he wait to complain about them until they locked him out of the room? Right away, when they had the two incidents of the farmers violating the laws of Shemitah, he should have run to Rabbi Yochanan to express his concerns. And the Tzlach suggests that if you have a great tzaddik who always seems to find the good and the positive light in every situation, we can understand possibly when he might sometimes misread a given one, as he is just such a positive person, and he can't seem to find a negative perspective on anything that happens in life. And the same goes for a negative person. If everything they see in their lives is always black, and everything is bad, they could also misread a situation and see it as being most negative. But both of these behaviors are excusable, because we as human beings have dispositions, we have thoughts, we have feelings, and sometimes that impacts the way that we see things that happen in front of us. But what's inexcusable is what the Pasuk says in Mishlei. When you have Matzdik Rasha Umarshia Tzadik, Tovas Hashem Gam Shnehem. If you have someone who looks negatively on the good and has a positive spin on the bad, that person is labeled in Mishlei as a Toeva. Such a person we have zero tolerance for. Such a person whose judgment is so unbalanced is going to be off about everything they do in their lives. Meaning that it's okay to make mistakes, but it's not okay when our mistakes are contradictory to each other. Reish Lakish admired the fact that his friends had such high levels of tolerance and were only able to see good in other people. He was impressed with their ability to justify the farmers who at face value seemed to be violating the halachas of Shemitah. But when they locked Reish Lakish out of the room, when it came time for them to do a character evaluation and assessment of him and to size him up, and they could not seem to find a place in their hearts to justify his behavior, that's when Reish Lakish realized that in fact his two friends were living incongruent and contradictory lifestyles. It was not about his personal honor and his personal kavod that slighted, but it was the inconsistency in their judgment of other people that was the major concern of Reish Lakish. In this week's parsha, we read of the unfortunate story of the Egel Hazav. Klal Yisrael literally served Avodah Zarah just a few short weeks after they accepted the Torah. And Rashi tells us in Parsha Shlach, Misha Asu Yisrael Asa Egel, right away when Klal Yisrael served the Egel Hazav, Ala B'machshava Shehakadosh Baruch Hu Yanu Shosam. Hashem, so to speak, thought in his mind that he should punish them right away. But Lamaisa, but the reality was, Lo Nenshu Aba Acher Shechatu B'maraglim. So to speak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu held it in and did not punish them until after they violated the sin of the Chet HaMeraglim. It's quite obvious that they were deserving of a major punishment for both of these mistakes. But what was the connection between the two incidents of Chet HaEgel and Chet HaMeraglim? Why did Hashem wait until after the Chet HaMeraglim to punish the Jewish people for their terrible mistake that they made by the Chet HaEgel? And perhaps we can suggest the following idea. The mistake of the Chet HaEgel was one of ribui emuna. They had too much loyalty, too much faith. They so sincerely believed in the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu that they could not imagine a world without loyalty to a leader. And if that alone was their only mistake, although it may have been a very grave mistake, perhaps they would have been forgiven. As the Pasuk says, Pesi yamin l'chol davar. Sometimes people are foolish, and they believe anything that we're willing to sell them. So here they fell into a trap. They believed what they were being sold by a group of people who were looking for a leader to replace Moshe Rabbeinu. But the point in which they were actually punished was on the occasion of the Chet HaMeraglim, as Rashi says, because the mistake by the Chet HaMeraglim was one of Chisaron Emuna. There, they had no trust. There, they were not loyal, and it was only then that they were punished for both mistakes that they had made. That is when it became clear to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they were leading conflicting, inconsistent, contradictory, erratic, and unbalanced lives. And that is something that is not tolerated. We can all make mistakes. We're human beings, and that's part of the human condition to make mistakes. But at least our mistakes have to be consistent with one another. This idea also helps us to understand the story of Yosef and his brothers. When revealing himself to his brothers, Yosef says the very emotional line, Ani Yosef ha'od avi chai. And the brothers, as we're told, were so taken aback from this revelation that they were so caught off guard and they simply did not know what to respond. Rashi famously comments on the pasuk, Olanu miyom hadin, olanu miyom hatochacha. Just imagine, Rashi says, what it's going to be like for us on the day of judgment after 120. Imagine the embarrassment that we're going to feel when we are rebuked for our actions in this world. But the problem that many Mefarshim ask on this Rashi is that nowhere in the Pasuk do we find Yosef giving his brothers any sort of musar, any sort of rebuke or retribution. He doesn't say anything. He simply states the facts, Ani Yosef, Ha'od Abi Chai, Am Yosef, is my father still alive? And the Beis Halevi writes that just stating the facts was the worst possible rebuke that one can ever hear. Yosef said to his brothers, when I asked you to keep Binyamin with me, all of a sudden you said we have an old father at home? You were so concerned about your father? Oh yeah, well if you were so concerned about your father, how come when it came time to selling me, nobody was concerned about your father's feelings? Nobody was concerned then about your concern that you have now. I see that you people are just inconsistent. You're living lives that are just one big question mark. And this is the greatest rebuke that a person can possibly ever hear about his actions. You can spend so much money on a nice esrog, you couldn't afford it. A nice menorah, you couldn't give tzedakah, you couldn't buy mezuzahs for your house. Then how do you afford to take a cruise off the coast of Alaska? How do you take the whole family skiing in Vail, and how do you go to a hotel for Pesach? You couldn't manage sitting in a sukkah because the weather was just unbearably hot? Then how do you sit outside by the baseball game and the tennis matches in the sweltering heat? And how are you able to sit on the beaches tanning in Florida? These are the most embarrassing questions a person can ever be asked. When we're shown that the way that we lead our own lives is completely contradictory, it's paradoxical, and it's absolutely incongruous. In Parshas Baaloscha, we have the famous Nunim Hafuchim, the upside-down Nuns, to separate between the terrible stories that took place in the Parsha there. And the Rishonim spend a lot of time trying to figure out these horrible misdeeds and what they actually were. According to some Rishonim, the first was with regard to the departure from Har Sinai. It was done in a manner, like Rashi says, Kitino kabareach mi beis ha-sefer, like a child who's running away from school. As the Ramban explains, the Jewish people were actually afraid that if they stayed at Har Sinai a minute longer, Hashem would pile onto them additional mitzvahs, and therefore they ran as fast as they could to make sure that wouldn't happen. And the second misdeed, as the Rishonim say, is that of the misonanim, the complainers. Rashi there explains that their complaints centered around the fact that they had to travel so far during just a 3-day period of travel. They were out of breath, they were so tired, and they felt the pace of the travel was just too quick for them. And it is just in between these two stories that we need the upside-down Nuns to be placed, because the Ribbono Shel Olam is particularly agitated by inconsistency and hypocrisy. The Ribbono Shel Olam can deal less harshly with a person who may be bad, but at least a person who's consistent in his evil ways. But a person who demonstrates hypocrisy and inconsistency is absolutely intolerable. What was the people's second complaint in Parshas Baaloscha? We're traveling too fast. 3 days, it's just too much for us to travel such a distance. But the Ribbono Shel Olam says, you were not concerned about traveling so fast when they fled from Har Sinai. You all ran like children running away from school. When they were worried about receiving more mitzvahs, they know how to travel quickly for a great distance. No one got out of breath there. No one had an issue with running too fast in that situation. And suddenly, just a few days later, everybody's worried about running too fast. It's such an inconsistency. It's hypocritical. And that's what the HaKadosh Baruch Hu was pointing out. When you act for yourself, somehow, it's not too fast. But when you need to do it for the Ribbono Shel Olam, suddenly, the same activity becomes too fast and too difficult. The glaring inconsistency in their deeds in that parsha, and the sharp contrast between these two episodes, needed the upside-down Nuns in order to dull the contrast. We needed a pause between these two stories. Perhaps this is why some explain that it was specifically the inverted Nun which is placed between the two stories, because the letter Nun symbolizes ne'emanus, consistency, faithful loyalty. But the inverted Nun symbolizes inconsistency. That, in fact, was the mistake represented by these two episodes. It was easy to make them happy when they were running away from Har Sinai. But on the other hand, it was easy to become agitated and depressed if they did not have access to every luxury that they could imagine that they ever wanted. We hear so many stories about other people, we read so much in the papers and on the blogs, and we're exposed to everything about everyone, and we're so quick to have opinions on matters that go on. But do we ever take a step back and just note our own personal inconsistencies? We'll roll our eyes when we see somebody coming into shul, schlepping in when we're already up to Shmoneh Esrei. But the one time that it happens to us, for whatever reason it is, we excuse the behavior and we explain to ourselves that it's okay. We get annoyed when the driver in the car next to us is texting and driving, when they almost smash into us and we have to swerve out of their way. But how often do we do it ourselves? How often do we falsely convince ourselves that such behavior is an emergency and we must do it? We're annoyed when someone double parks and blocks the street. But how often do we do the same thing and run into a store just to get one thing quickly? And we don't even take a minute to think about how annoying it feels to other people that are stuck behind us. We're so inconsistent in our judgment of other people, and we don't even think about how foolish we look when we do the exact same things. Let's use this week as a time to consider our own practices. Let's think about whether our thoughts and our actions are in the same place. Are we so quick to judge others for misdeeds that we ourselves do the same? Let's work on being just a little more honest with ourselves and with others. And perhaps we'll finally help to yield a forgiveness for the Chet HaEgel which we still suffer from to this day. I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos.